The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
Welcome to Ron Paul, the weekly podcast. I'm Charles Goyette. The British Prime Minister wanted to go to war in Syria, but Parliament took a different view. Here in the United States, President Obama intended to go to war on nobody's say-so but his own, but after the Brits backed down, Obama seems to have backed down as well and kicked the ball into the court of Congress. Why did he do it, and what will Congress do? We'll hear from Ron Paul right after this.
Laura Ingraham is the number one woman in talk radio, and now podcasts, too.
Two kinds of middle-class Americans are struggling today. People who can't find any work, and full-timers who can't seem to get ahead. Bad economies are bad for the family.
Laura Ingraham.
So they're going to limit our gun purchases. And what are we going to give the little boys to play with? Well, dresses.
Get your daily dose of Laura Extra at PodcastOne.com.
Dr. Paul, some of the wild warmongers, like Representative Peter King of New York, say President Obama doesn't need Congress to launch a strike in Syria, and that Obama is abdicating his responsibility. King says the president doesn't need 535 members of Congress to enforce his own red line. Now, taken to its logical conclusion, and that's not very far, it implies a complete authoritarian state in which the president could go about issuing ultimatums and dictates all by himself.
In some ways, he's right. You know, our presidents have been acting independently now for several decades, and they don't pay much attention to the Congress, and Congress doesn't pay much attention to their responsibilities. And I believe that they think they do have the authority. It's almost, because of a default. But they don't have the moral authority. They don't have the constitutional authority to do that. But, you know, even George Bush Sr. and George W. Bush both went to the Congress only after a little bit of pressure, and they both argued the case, you know, that they don't have to do this. And I think Obama is about in that same position. He still maintains he has the authority. He can do it. Guys like King says that he can. And they certainly have been able to get away with, you know, constant war. Look at what they do under this so-called global war on terrorism. They drop bombs on any country that they want. They put our CIA and hit pieces any place they want. So the presidents do assume a tremendous amount of authority. But, you know, I was definitely surprised when it came about, like just about everybody else was. Nobody the day before, the hour before this happened, I don't even think the people in his own administration would have been able to predict what happened. But I do think it had a lot to do with the vote in England against the prime minister. And I thought that was great. And this is in the opening salvo of the undermining of the warmongers who run our empire, and that the people give up support. You know, even when the kings of old lost support of the people, they could be dethroned. And this might be what's happening. But there were a couple statistics there that I thought were interesting. The first one was this was the first time this happened in the parliament since 1782. The last time it happened was after the colonists beat the British and the support for the prime minister diminished, and he didn't get the support for any military operation after that. So that tells you this is a major event. But there was another economic event, and with a little stretch, I think I can tie it in, that the Bank of England, which is more than 300 years old, has the lowest interest rates in its 300 plus years of history, which tells you, you know, what's going on, what kind of major things are occurring in the world, first in the foreign policy as well as financially. Low interest rates, if people understand what central banks do, means that there's a bubble out there and people keep buying debt. So there's a huge debt bubble out there, and there's still this trust in the sovereign debt, which can't last forever. So there's always a connection between finances and war, because wars cost money. Even this additional expansion of our military operation over in Syria can cost billions of dollars. And the military people say they don't even have the money, that Congress will have to pass a supplemental appropriation. So nobody's really talking about that in Washington. So with the debt as it is and the finances as it is, this again puts more pressure on the financial system. But when you look at those two things, you think, boy, what kind of major events lie before us? And I think they're pretty big. I think this whole idea of going back to the Congress, you could say, hey, that's great. But believe me, it's not because all of a sudden our president has a lot of respect for the Constitution and he wants, to act within the confines of the Constitution. The truth is he was blatant that he does not need to do that and doesn't want to ever yield on that prerogative. But, you know, another thing the president said that I think is interesting is that he is hoping that there will be a consensus in the Congress, that the two parties will overlook their bipartisan differences and come together and support this expansion of the war. And I thought, well, yes, that's exactly what we need. We need to overcome some of this bipartisanship and come together. Sort of like they did with the Amash's vote on reining in NSA. You know, Republican and Democrat grassroots individuals, you know, almost passed that to restrict the NSA. So there's two groups over there that are bipartisan. The one group, the leadership of the Republicans and the leadership of the Democrats, and they want to support the war and support the president and all these things. But then there's another bipartisan group because peace reaches out across party lines. And that coalition is pretty strong, and it's going to be tested. The test will be, will the Democrats yield and say, well, I have to take care of my leader. I have to go with the president. Or are they going to vote more what they believe in, that the Bush type of foreign policy is what they didn't want, and they're disappointed with the president? And on the Republican side, it's more of a challenge to find out, have we converted enough people in the Congress to come our way and look at this and say that, we need to change our militaristic foreign policy, which is led by McCain and Lindsey Graham. Have you ever noticed, and I'm sure you have, Charles, noticed that those two individuals are on TV constantly, you know, beating the war drums. But, Justin Amash and a few others are not, on TV every night talking about the Constitution, limited government, and a policy of peace. So this, to me, will be a very, very interesting vote. I hope it goes the right way. A lot of people have talked about just whose victory this has been so far and might be. You know, they say, well, Obama backing down, this is a tremendous victory for Assad. Well, politically, possibly that is the case. But others say that, in comparison, this means a setback for the rebels. And lo and behold, a setback for Al-Qaeda, because us going in there, we actually align ourselves with the Al-Qaeda. Let's hope it's a real victory for the people in the Congress, that the people get upset enough, they send a message to Congress, and Congress gets up and finally acts with a little bit of backbone and resists, what Obama is planning to do. That would be wonderful, because then that would lead into a full discussion of our foreign policy, why non-interventionist doesn't even get us into these messes. You know, the red line debate, I keep thinking, that's so unnecessary and so fictitious. I'd like to think that the red line was nothing more than a red herring, because I don't think our administration, I don't think the people who want this war really care about the number of people killed. Or they would be concerned about the 5,000 that have died at the hands of our drones, or 1,000 Christians that have been killed by the rebels that we have aligned ourselves with. If that were the case, our policies would change. We cannot solve all the problems of the world. We can be morally responsible for our own selves and our own actions, but we cannot speak for the world. Obama says we have to do this because we can't let it go where the world doesn't speak out against these atrocious acts by Assad, which he really hasn't proven. But who's to speak for the world? Obama? Not that I have much respect for the United Nations, but some people thought the United Nations was supposed to. The United Nations doesn't, they don't want to speak out, nor does NATO. Nor does the British government, nor do the Russians, nor do the Chinese, nor do the Indians. Nobody's speaking out, but all of a sudden, because nobody wants to do it, Obama says, yes, the world has to speak out and do something. So evidently, he believes he's speaking for the whole world. I think that's over the top. I think it represents a naivety that has led us into these many problems. But something big is happening. I think we're at a crucial point. And even if the president does get this authority, I don't think it's going to restate this position that we can endlessly be the policemen of the world and keep our empire together. Because regardless, I believe the evidence is out there that our empire is coming to an end. And quite frankly, I think that would be good for us and good for the world.
Dr. Paul, one final question when we continue in a moment about the peculiar psychology of elected officials. That's next.
How would you like to do something that's good for you and good for America? Well, you can, just by shopping like you normally do. You see, just about everybody uses Amazon these days, because it's so easy. But from now on, when you're going to shop on Amazon, go to the PodcastOne.com Ron Paul page and click on the Amazon link there. When you do, a portion of whatever you buy gets kicked back to the Ron Paul Show to help keep the podcast coming and keep us from having to run tons and tons of ads. So we can be selective and focus on getting you Ron's message. So do it. Go to PodcastOne.com. Click on the Ron Paul page and click on Amazon. The next time you're going to buy something, use that link. You'll be helping yourself because you're buying something you want, and helping America because you're helping keep Ron Paul's messages coming. And there's no extra costs involved. You pay the same price, it's the same Amazon. If you want to help out even more, tell your friends to do the same thing. Go to PodcastOne.com, click on Ron Paul, then click on the Amazon link. You'll be glad you did.
I wonder sometimes why some of these elected officials, they spend much of their lives trying to get in positions of responsibility so that they can wield decision-making power. And then in office, they can't wait to pass the hot potato to the president. We've seen this over and over. Whatever he decides about going to war is just fine with us. Here's authority. You decide. We don't know. It seems like they want to cover if things go badly, and they want to be able to jump in front of the parade if things go well.
You know, I think that is true. I don't think the Congress really wanted this vote. They like complaining, you know, for political reasons, so that they're in a position, if it goes badly, then they can, you know, just put all the blame on the president. This actually was part of the debate going up to the Iraq War, in which I was very much engaged in the debate. And I told the people in the committee, the Foreign Affairs Committee, that if they wanted to go to war, they ought to just declare the war. But they would have no part of this. But really, behind that argument was the fact that they didn't want the responsibility. And we have a feckless Congress. That's, I think, our big problem. They do not stand up. They do want to be in office. They like receiving the checks, and they like the prestige. But at the same time, they do not stand up for what is right. They stand up what is politically expedient. It's very partisan, but they never challenge ideas. And unfortunately, both parties have very similar philosophies when it comes to foreign policy, monetary policy, welfare state, military-industrial complex. All of this is endorsed by both parties. So that is the reason you hear a lot of stories now where the base of the Democratic Party is not very happy with Obama. At the same time, the base of the Republican Party, if we have one strong enough that believed in very limited government, are never happy with our presidents, and sometimes are not satisfied with their candidates. So this is, you know, a time where bipartisanship might be very good, as long as it's a coalition of the right kind of people and the right ideas, rather than the bipartisanship that they put together to make sure the NSA maintain their powers. So we will see shortly just how this plays out.
And we'll speak about it then. Thank you, Dr. Paul, for another great conversation and podcast. Ron Paul, the weekly podcast. I'm Charles Goyette.
This concludes another PodcastOne.com program.